Good morning. This is the International Connection as it comes to you every single Saturday morning on File 88. My name is Adam Vaughn, and as per usual, I'm joined by Bob Marshall and Tom Rich. Today we're going to be taking a look at Dr. Peter Beter, who is familiar to people who have been following us. For those who haven't, he's a source within the Pentagon, essentially, or used to be within the Pentagon, in some very high government circles in the United States, who has his own news service, which has gone underground for the last couple of years, but essentially used to broadcast regularly by way of tape, pre-recorded messages, and newsletters. For those that have listened, you'll recognize his name. He's the man who talks about organic robotoids. Remember, that word will be mentioned quite a few times today. And Bob, perhaps you'd like to introduce where this particular segment comes from.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, we started off where he made the first announcement of the existence of the organic robotoids in his May 1979 tape, and he gave the overview in that tape, and we're going to go into the scientific details that he gave next month in June 1979 of how the organic robotoids are made. The part where we come in on the tape is he has been explaining the literature through the 50s and 60s and early 70s that point to the existence of these things. And then we come into where Dr. Beter gets into the details of the robotoid themselves.
Now, one of the more important things to notice or to take account of is the fact that this is one of the more radical and one of the more fantastical elements within any International Connection segment. We're not asking you to necessarily believe this. What you should do is you should remember that it's been said, and take it down more as information and not necessarily as opinion. It's not necessarily true, of course, and it's not necessarily not true. But we remind you that the International Connection is trying to present these alternative sources in their original form for discussion both by our panel here today and also for discussion out there in listening land. In terms of talk to Peter Beter, he, as I said before, is the most controversial, perhaps in some respects, of all of our sources. But just to sort of back it up, I'm just going to read a little bit from a Globe and Mail report that was published last week, and it talks about an anti-satellite system. It's the Pentagon commenting on it. For a number of years before this robotoid incident, Dr. Peter Beter discussed the anti-satellite weapons and termed them under a conflict that he entitled the Battle of the Harvest Moon. A number of predictions that he made in those tape segments obviously never came true, i.e. a thermonuclear war, and still yet to be proven to me that there's a lunar base that has knocked off some American lunar bases. At any rate, this little particular quote is kind of interesting, and I'll read it to you right from the Globe and Mail. "The Soviets already have an operational land-based ASAT system and have had it since 1977. This, according to a Pentagon statement, said in a recent response to a Soviet warning. As far as the Pentagon is concerned, there is no difference between operational and deployed. The Soviets have destroyed satellites in space with their ASAT system more than once, the Pentagon said." Now, what this indicates is that although Dr. Peter Beter may have made up entirely the Battle of the Harvest Moon, or maybe founded on some information, part of the information that he discussed, that is the anti-satellite system techniques that are on Earth, are in fact there, and the Pentagon and the Soviets have acknowledged them. And by way of that, I think it's perhaps a good time to lead into the tape. And remember, don't take this as gospel. Take this as a series of segments that provide some information. Remember them, and maybe 5 years down the road, maybe 5 months down the road, they might come back and work their way into mainstream media. So with that, let's take a listen.
"But these things only hint very vaguely at the scientific strides that have made organic robotoids a reality. The man-made biological machine, known as a robotoid, is remarkable from head to foot. But the most astonishing thing about them is their ability to simulate human beings, not just in appearance, but in behavior. In other words, the most crucial and most amazing thing about a Russian organic robotoid is its biological computer brain. The developments that were destined to lead to Russia's breakthrough in robotoid brain research began 32 years ago, in 1947. In that year, a Hungarian-born physicist, Dr. Denis Gabor, conceived of a way to make three-dimensional photographs called holograms. It was a revolutionary scientific discovery, and it was destined to lead to the Nobel Prize for Dr. Gabor. He did not receive the prize until 24 years later, in 1971. By then, holograms were a reality in numerous laboratories worldwide. And yet, most members of the general public still had not heard of holography. And even today, more than three decades after Dr. Gabor's original discovery, holography is still unfamiliar to the public as a whole. In 1947, Dr. Gabor's theory pointed the way toward holography, but at that time, holograms could not actually be made. What was needed in order to make them was something called monochromatic light, that is, light of just one wavelength. No one knew how to create that kind of light in 1947. But in 1960, the situation suddenly changed. That was the year the laser was invented. When lasers are discussed in public, attention is usually focused on just one of their amazing characteristics. That's the ability of a laser to produce a narrow, intense beam of light. The beam can travel great distances without spreading out and diffusing. Lasers pointed the way toward energy beam weapons, among other things. And as I revealed long ago in Audio Letter 26, this is what secretly spawned America's crash program to get to the moon in 1961. But the reason laser beams behave the way they do is that the light they produce is monochromatic, so they are made to order for generating holograms. Like lasers, holography has led to developments that were totally unexpected, and one of these was the Russian breakthrough in biological computer brains some years ago. When you hear how they work, you'll understand why robotoids act so much like the human beings they replace. A hologram is a very unusual kind of photograph. To make one, the film is exposed using a laser and a set of mirrors and lenses. And to make the holograph image on the film visible later on, laser light must again be used. When you look at a hologram, it is as if you were looking through a window at the real object. You can move back and forth, up and down, and see it from different angles, in three-dimensional detail. By contrast, of course, a conventional photograph is flat and looks the same from all angles. Holograms are also different in another way. If you tear a normal photograph into several pieces, you ruin it. Each piece contains only a disconnected fraction of the total, but not so with a hologram. If you cut up a holographic film into several pieces, each piece still contains almost the entire image. There is some loss of detail, but basically, it's all there. It's this fact that led years ago to the Russian breakthrough in biological computer brains for their robotoids. For quite some time, scientists in the intelligence community worldwide studying the human brain have known one very important fact. That fact is that a portion of a human brain can be removed through accident or surgery, and yet the person still retains most of his original memory. So in this respect, the memory in a human brain is like a hologram. Nowadays, the relationship between holography and human memory is beginning to be understood in the West. For example, Dr. Carl Prebram, a neuropsychologist at Stanford University, wrote about it recently in the magazine Psychology Today. As he pointed out, the implications of holography are enormous, both for brain research and for computers. But this relationship was first recognized not in America, but in a research laboratory at Russia's Siberian Science City, Novosibirsk. The reason the Russians have scooped the West in many recent scientific discoveries is not that they are supermen while we are mental midgets. Instead, it has to do with the way they organize their efforts in science and technology. This organization is totally different from that in the West, and it's turning out to be far more efficient. For one thing, when it comes to research, Communications in Russia are far superior to those in the West. There are more than 5,000 research centers and laboratories in Russia doing research and development of all kinds. And they are all linked together by vigorous communications, not only within each scientific field, but between different fields. There's also a fundamental difference in what is discussed in Russian technical literature as compared with the West. In the West, a scientist usually publishes a technical paper only to report a success of some kind. If he carries out a research project that fails, he generally publishes nothing about it. But in Russia, many failures and problems are discussed very openly in the technical literature. As a result, many areas of research meet a very different fate in Russia than in the West. Here in America, an elaborate and expensive scientific project may come very close to success, but fall through because of a key missing ingredient. When that happens, very little is published about it. But in Russia, the researchers describe their problems and failures. And among the thousands of other scientists nationwide, one might have the answer. So the Russian system, which is built around cooperation, often produces success. But the Western system, especially in America, is built around jealousy, and it often leads to failure. It's happened many times, my friends, and it happened several years ago in robotoid brain development. Last month, I revealed that the Russians can manufacture organic robotoids, which are almost exact carbon copies of real human beings.
This is perhaps an adequate place to take a break. One of the things that I find very disturbing about people that talk about these, quote, new scientific breakthroughs, unquote, is that they often leave out key pieces of the jigsaw puzzle. For instance, he talks about holographic images being allowed to be shattered and each piece containing a full image, and then he simply says the same can happen with brains. He's given a very detailed account of how and why a holograph is put together. He seems to just dismiss out of hand or else refuses to discuss the makeup of the brain. And his discussions on the brain are radically different from the generally accepted versions of how the brain is structured. And I wonder why he doesn't provide the detail that he provides in holographs.
Well, of course, even today, to explain, if Dr. Beter were explaining the atomic bomb, he'd have a very difficult time doing it and would have to leave out key segments, even where that's a technology that's 40 years or more old. Isn't that right, Bob?
Yeah, and also, he only has 60 minutes, and he keeps referring another.
Okay, but I mean, but
this is a huge area of
explaining a holograph.
To describe.
Explaining a holograph is important enough for him to include it. But he doesn't go into explaining why the brain works that way.
He's going to come in. He's going to go into this upcoming.
Yeah.
Okay, but it just seems to me that what he's avoiding the realist question, if you want to put it in those terms. He's not taking a look at why the brain works that way. He's simply just asking you to accept the fact that it does because a holograph works that way, and in terms of the chemical makeup of the two, in terms of the biological makeup of the two elements, they're radically different. One's essentially a plate of glass with a silver nitrate in it, and the other one is an organ of the body, and there's no correlation between the two, and you shouldn't be forced to accept out of hand the jump in faith.
Well, I think there is a correlation here. I think that the structure behind the DNA molecule, in which each cell and gene contains all the information, is very synonymous to the situation of the hologram, in which every single piece contains all the information. And it's this as a structure of the process and the similarity between them, which Beter's trying to use as a metaphor so that people could try and get an idea of what's really there behind the technology.
Just one final quick little question. One of the things that's been talked about a lot in the last few years in terms of studies done on the brain is the fact there's left and right hemisphere and they do entirely different things. Surely if you took a brain sample, as he suggests, from a person from the right brain, you'd get a totally different robotoid than if you took it from the left brain.
No, they interrelate. People can function with the left brain or right brain.
But they're radically different in terms of what they do well and what they don't do well.
Yeah, but I don't think he's saying that the particular sample they're taking is either left or right. The cells that they use contain the information about all parts of the brain.
Okay, well let's take another listen to the tape. I still have questions, but I'll wait till the end of this.
Sure. Beings. This is done by a process that simulates the genetic coding of the person to be copied. It sounds a little like cloning, but it's not. A clone of a human would itself be a human, but an organic robotoid is not human. It's an artificial life form, like an animal in some ways, but like a computerized machine in others. Every Russian robotoid has what is called a holographic brain. This brain duplicates essentially the entire memory of a person being copied. The key to doing this is a new technique called an ultrasonic cerebral hologram. Using high-frequency sound waves, which are inaudible, a complete three-dimensional picture is made of a person's brain. This is a painless, non-destructive process, and under the proper conditions, it can be done without the person even being aware of it. Last month, I revealed that the Russians are using Nelson Rockefeller's hit list to weed out Bolsheviks here in America. And for roughly 3 years, they have been preparing for this day. They have been secretly making cerebral holograms of the people on the list at every opportunity. This has been done to every person on Rockefeller's list who has visited Russia or Eastern Europe in the past 3 years. When an organic robotoid is made to simulate, for example, our late President Jimmy Carter, two major factors are involved. One is the genetic coding required to simulate Carter's appearance, voice, fingerprints, and so on. The other is a holographic image of Carter's brain. This image is a complete record of the neuron patterns which existed in Carter's brain at the moment the hologram was made. Therefore, it contains all of the memory and knowledge Carter had up to that moment. When a Carter robotoid is made, the biological computer in its head is caused to form according to the holographic record of Carter's brain. However, certain portions of the robotoid computer are caused to deviate from the holographic record. The end result is a biological computer, which has to be programmed, but which contains essentially all of Carter's memory, involuntary mannerisms, and the like. As a result, a Carter robotoid will automatically do certain kinds of things without the need for specific programming. For example, a Carter robotoid will seem to recognize old friends. That's because the computer memory of the robotoid reproduces Carter's memory of that friend. The holographic process puts it there automatically without the Russian programmers even having to know it's there. Organic robotoids are such amazing creatures that they are still a subject of questioning and debate. This is true even among the Russian scientists who made them a reality. For example, robotoids seem to have no true instinct for self-preservation. In this regard, they act like machines, simply doing as they are told to do. By contrast, both humans and animals generally have the instinct for self-preservation. Robotoids can be programmed for self-preservation, but they are equally willing, if willing is the word, to perform suicide missions. Exploratory one-way trips into space are only one example of this. If a space mission looks too dangerous to risk the life of an experienced cosmonaut, a robotoid can now be used. The robotoid copy of the cosmonaut is already trained the moment it's made, thanks to its holographic memory. Organic robotoids look and act so much like human beings that it's hard for us to get used to the idea that they are not human. But the Russians decided several months ago that the stakes are too high not to employ them. And so, the silent Russian invasion of America by robotoids is now well underway. Topic number two. The Russian strategy is to work from the top down in dismantling Bolshevik power here in the United States. In this respect, they are doing the same thing, in principle, as they did in overthrowing Bolshevik power in Russia. Within Russia itself, the overthrow process made use of human doubles.
Okay. When this topic was introduced about 2 weeks ago, I questioned at that time the fact that these people's families or someone had to start noticing the fact that robotoids and doubles were being used, and at some point it had to be exposed by someone else besides Dr. Beter. It seems to me that it's just too convenient that he discovers the incident and he comes up with all the explanations. He's the only person talking about it.
Well, it's probably a matter of national security. The National Security Council is bypass Congress, the president, and they can do what they want.
But even so, history has shown us that the National Security Council is not a leak-proof organization. And when people find, I can't imagine coming home to your mother or your father and finding out that they're a robotoid and not picking up on certain things.
History also has shown us that one of the largest operations ever undertaken by the government, the Manhattan Project, where billions of dollars and thousands of people were employed, was kept from the public for many years.
The government has
shown quite substantially to the people that it can and has the ability to keep these large projects under wraps, and the people who do get to the press, as we've mentioned before, the project puny secrets need protection. Large secrets like this are protected by public incredulity.
But on the other hand, the Manhattan Project is a project where you're not talking about killing a number of people as part of the project in terms of doing it privately. I mean, obviously, it killed a number of people when it was dropped, but the project wasn't the systematic replacing of a number of top-level officials. And you can't just assume that this would go on without knowledge and that no one would pick up on it. I mean, if it isn't even true to begin with.
This is where our other source comes in, Mae Brussel and Penn Jones Jr. with the Kennedy assassination and the strange death theory, which, of course, they made a movie about, Executive Action, where over 100 people after the Kennedy assassination were killed, and the London Actuarials did a survey and found that the odds of those same 100 people dying by the same strange way were 100,000 trillion to one.
Okay. Well, why don't we take a listen to the end of the tape, and then we'll discuss it a little bit more.
These doubles were Christians with a level of dedication that is almost unthinkable in the West. They underwent plastic surgery at the expense of a lifelong change in their appearance. They spent years in detailed study of the persons they were to replace. And then once they had replaced powerful people, they saw to it that other members of their Christian sect acquired positions of power. Over the years, untold numbers of these Christian doubles in powerful positions were eventually found out. When that happened, they were purged by the Bolsheviks. But when they died, they took with them the knowledge of the identities of other Christians whom they had placed in power. And so with every Christian they killed, the Bolsheviks were gradually sealing their own fate. They never caught on to the master takeover plan of the native Russian Christians until it was too late. Today, the Russians are putting that experience to use again in their robotoid strategy to take control of America. Bolshevik power is always centralized. So the Russians are starting with the head of the Bolshevik serpent. From there, they intend to work outward gradually to the many tentacles of Bolshevik power. As of now, the White House and Cabinet are under complete control by Russia. According to my latest intelligence report, only one member of the Carter cabinet is still alive. All the rest, including the ad hoc gang of four, have been replaced by Russian robotoids. Likewise, The United States now has a Supreme Court made up of 9 Russian robotoids. And now Russia is focusing on the main members of the United States Senate who are opposing SALT II. When Carter Robotoid No. 3 was in Vienna earlier this month for the SALT II summit, he acted like a puppy dog around Leonid Brezhnev No. 2. And Brezhnev II, the human double for the late real Brezhnev, likewise treated the alleged Carter like a puppy. Whenever he tired of talking or became hungry, Brezhnev II simply got up and walked off. And the grinning replica of the late Jimmy Carter would follow obediently at his heels. Finally, on June 18, the Carter Robotoid set the world on its ear by kissing and hugging Brezhnev II after the SALT II signing ceremony. While the process of takeover is underway, the Russians will not render the robotoids vulnerable to neutralization by the Bolsheviks. For that reason, the robotoids, which have already replaced certain senators, are continuing to pretend that they oppose SALT II. To do otherwise would attract attention prematurely.
Well, no wonder Jimmy Carter didn't get reelected. The guy's a Russian. No, I mean it's nice science fiction, but it begins and ends there. It's just ridiculous.
Okay, now what did you think of Dr. Beter's explanation of the making of the robotoid?
I mean, as I said, good science fiction is always believable, and I am aware of, you know, sort of your opinion of science fiction as being behind the times, but I mean it just doesn't wash. I mean, essentially what you're saying now is the guy that's running around writing memoirs is a robot and isn't in fact Jimmy Carter, and I just think it's ridiculous.
Well, you're free to think that.
Obviously, I am.
Well, the Battle of the Harvest Moon certainly also sounds just as bizarre. But, you know, Bob, it may be that the meaning of the Battle of the Harvest Moon is that our nation could be about to go into captivity because our defenses are useless. This Globe article certainly gives some new light to what you put on the air quite a long time ago last year. And this is precisely what Barbara Lloyd and Knowlton don't know, and it's very unfortunate because the effects of this battle are there latent in the nation's collective subconscious. And, of course, this raises many questions about the private operators who control our electric media, which serve as our extended senses, our eyes and our ears, and which controls our image of reality.
Yeah, it's interesting in the Globe article that they say the Russians have had this ASAT ability since 1977, which is the exact year the Battle of the Harvest Moon happened.
As I said, I'm not saying that everything he's said is totally off base. I'm just saying that the Battle of the Harvest Moon had the makeup and it had the rudiments of something which could definitely be based in reality, and the Globe article will out that. But in terms of replacing heads of states with robotoids and replacing entire cabinets and describing the actions and the reactions of world leaders as being robots is ridiculous. I think that there is some grains in truth. I think another one of the grains of truth that comes out is his reference to the appearance or the theory that there are Christians participating in Soviet government. Another Globe and Mail article of about two months ago, in the beginning of July, talked about the fact that a lot of the Georgian members of the Kremlin are in fact Christian, and the Time magazine article that was released last week with Gorbachev on the cover mentions the fact that there is, well, there are references to God which in themselves are fairly unique in terms of a quote Marxist unquote leader. However, I don't think that necessarily supports the fact that either one of them are robotoids. I think that he's gone off base on the robotoids issue, and I think that it really damages his credibility.
One of the things that Beter hasn't yet, and we haven't put forward here, and we will in future shows on Beter, is how it's fascinating the pattern is that when robotoids are instituted in institutions and a new robotoid comes in, according to Beter, what we do find is immediate shifts in policies within the institutions involved, as if some new group has taken over.
Yeah, but again, you're rationalizing events to fit the robotoid pattern, political institutions change their course a lot of times for a lot of different reasons, and to say it's because they're robots is ludicrous.
The rationalization, though, of course, takes place prior to the event, which leads one to question it further.
It's fairly easy to predict that the Russian government will have policy changes.
To predict that when the Pope went to Poland and Beter says he was replaced by a robotoid, that all of a sudden, instead of taking Lech Walesa out in front of the public and being seen with him, he completely reverses his stand from a whole year of policy. Puts him down. And this is something, of course, we haven't.
I think you're taking the Pope's visit out of context in some regards. I don't think he turned his back on Lech Walesa. I think there is a conscious effort by the Vatican to make the most of it spiritually and to ignore the political ramifications of his visit. That's real politics. That's politics in the 20th century, and it's politics probably throughout the ages. I don't think it's fair to call the guy a robotoid simply because he has to respond to political climates in Europe.
Well, it's interesting. The original reason I played this tape was the scientific explanation of the robotoid, and I think if he's making it up, I think he does a good job in making it plausible.
Fair enough. He makes a good job making it plausible. I don't think he makes I don't think he explains one of the key elements, as I said earlier. I think that the leap of faith based in the in creating a holographic brain is just too big a leap of faith to make it truly plausible. I think he sets out a good groundwork, and I admire the imagination. I'm not sure I admire the statistics.
Well, it's interesting that he is the robotoid is a machine, a computerized brain, not a human, and he says that is the hardest thing for us to accept, and that was implicit in your first question.
I guess you might say he's right again. Any rate, this is the International Connection that you've been listening to. Our topic today was robotoids, as brought to us by Dr. Peter Beter. It's time to sign off, but join us again next Saturday at the same time. For Bob Marshall and Tom Rich, I'm Adam Vaughn. Have a good afternoon.
The International Connection is a Bob Marshall production. CKLN looks at the show as an opportunity to expose and deal with radical and dissenting opinions currently being presented in other parts of the world. The comments and views expressed on the show occasionally exceed the established norms of mainstream journalism. As such, the opinions expressed are those of the participants and not the radio station.